To get the most out of your career as a physician, you need an employment contract that supports you. Unfortunately, most contracts do not initially include everything you need to be successful. Employers draft contracts with their best interests in mind, but the terms that benefit your employer are rarely as valuable to you. And before signing an employment contract, you should always make sure your salary, bonuses, paid time off, and other terms are fair.
Resolve is the one and only place you can get live salary data, so you know exactly what's happening in your specialty at all times. The best part is the data is verified from real physician contracts. With access to data on what physicians like you are earning, you know when you are being underpaid and can confidently ask for what you deserve. In addition to providing data, they are the number one firm specializing in physician employment contracts. Trust us, contracts are very important. They work with every specialty nationwide.
At Resolve, you get connected with an experienced attorney who will work with you one-on-one to ensure you sign with confidence. Your attorney will take your priorities into account, address concerns, make suggestions, and help you strategize for any negotiations. They can even negotiate with an employer on your behalf. So whether you are a seasoned attending or just finished training, Resolve is here to support you every step of the way. Visit resolve.com to learn more and discover how to sign your ideal employment contract. Resolve, your trusted partner for physician contract review, negotiations, and salary data.
Finally, a source of raw, real, and honest information on healthcare issues that matter most. Welcome to BS Free MD. From the latest medical information to how to stay sane as a doctor or a patient, no subject is taboo, and no BS is allowed. Now, let's welcome your hosts, Drs. May and Tim Hindmarsh.
Hello, everybody, and of course, welcome back to another wonderful episode of BS Free MD with your hosts, Tim and May Hindmarsh. All right, today, I'm just going to get right into it. We are talking about a topic that's as complex as it is controversial, and of course, that's the stuff we love to get into with a guest whose life story, man, I'm almost just getting emotional now, brings incredible insight into the conversation about gender identity and regret. And joining us is Walt Heyer, a man whose journey through gender reassignment surgery and back has fueled his mission to support those who face regrets about their transitions. And Tim and I first heard Walt's story on the documentary we watched, Gender Transformation, The Untold Realities. It came out in 2023, and we're so amazed and touched by his journey and his commitment to helping others now that we knew we had to have him on our show. He's a father, a former corporate executive, and husband, and Walt has transitioned from male to female at the age of 42, only to return to his male identity 8 years later after his transition. Now, over 30 years post-transition, he stands as a beacon of hope for redemption and restoration. He's not only a senior fellow at the Family Research Council and a faculty member at Influence Network, but also a prolific writer with over 60 articles and 7 books to his name. His latest work, Trans Life Survivors, along with his websites sexchangeregret.com and walthire.com, aims to spread his message of hope and caution, especially regarding children undergoing gender transition. And this is something very dear to my heart and strikes a heartstring and a nerve. So join us as we get into this great interview with Walt to hear about his story and the lessons he's learned along the way. Welcome to the show, Walt. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, great. This is great to be on BS Free MD. okay, that should be my, I should have that tattooed on my forehead.
There you go. BS Free MD. Like, you get after it. I love it. Well, let's start because, I really want our listeners to just sort of hear the story of the beginning of everything for you. I mean, as Tim and I know the whole story, but you have lived your life as a woman You transitioned in adulthood in your 40s and back, but things didn't really start in your adulthood, really, that spurred this on. Things kind of began, as it does for most people, as some trauma that you experienced in childhood. Can you just take it away and tell us sort of, you know, the things that happened?
Yeah. Thanks for allowing me to do that. You know, I think one of the things is that, and to keep this clean and free of any debris, you know, the fact of the matter is nobody ever transitions. There are no transgenders, and it's not about gender. And once we finally get to that point where we can have that discussion, we can actually start helping people. I identified as a female for 8 years, but I wasn't a female. I didn't transition. All I did was masquerade around, you know, working at jobs and saying I was Laura Jensen female, but I wasn't. And so, that's the BS free part. I mean, I've found out that once I work with anybody, it doesn't matter who it is, the first thing I tell them is you're not transgender. You never transition. You don't have gender dysphoria. And we get all that stuff out of the way. I can begin to help you. And so the fact of the matter is just, you know, my story typifies what really goes on. I was physically abused by my mother when I was 2 or 3 years old. I was cross-dressed by my grandmother when I was 4 years old. I was abused physically by my father when I was 6 and 7 years old. And I was sexually abused by my uncle by the time I was 9. So now, those are what that is called is adverse childhood experiences. They're called ACEs, and there's a way to deal with them. You go get a trauma therapist and you get tested on the ACEs scale and you have a trauma therapist. You don't need hormones. You don't need surgery. And it's not about gender. It's about being abused. It's about trauma. It's about loss. It's about all these other things. And I have found in the thousands of people that I've personally worked with, through my website, sexchangeregret.com. I'm working with them every day. I get them every single day. And the story is always the same. I ask them about their childhood and they say, well, it was fine. I said, what do you mean it was fine? You know, you had a great father. You had a great, oh no, my father was a jerk. He was a drug addict. He was an alcoholic. He was never there for me. He abused my mother. I said, oh, nice. Beautiful, beautiful household. No wonder you struggled. So the job, the task, is like they didn't do with me, because everything goes wrong when somebody enters the office of somebody who claims to be a gender therapist. That's where everything goes to in a handbasket, because they automatically say you have gender dysphoria. Well, the fact of the matter is they have dysphoria. That is an absolute case. Yes, yes, yes. But it's not about gender. They say it's gender dysphoria. The term was coined in 1973 by Dr. Harry Benjamin and was used by my doctor. My therapist actually was Dr. Paul Walker, who drafted the Harry Benjamin International Standards of Care in 1979 that morphed into WPATH. That was my therapist. He was a world leading expert in this subject. And he diagnosed me long before the word was used with gender dysphoria, said, you know, you need hormones, you need surgery. And I explained my childhood. Your childhood has no bearing on this. You just need hormones and surgery. See, that they always will dismiss anything that happened in the childhood. They don't care about comorbidities. They don't care about abuses that happened. They care about giving you hormones and cutting off body parts. These are butchers. They're not helping anybody. This is the most barbaric, ridiculous thing that's ever happened. Now they love doing it to kids because it makes them money. They should all be locked up. I can't tell you how upsetting it is that people actually use the term transgender, because if you use the term transgender, you're actually saying that they accomplished the job. So the word transgender should not even be used. Transition. They put these words into our minds, saying, you know, somebody transitioned. No, you didn't transition. You're a sort of a cosmetic replica of what a woman is if you're a man like Jenner. He's not a woman. Sorry, Jenner. You're just not a woman. And so this is the part that I was going to write a book and use the actual words BS, transgenderism is BS, because the whole thing is. And, you know, we got to throw all this stuff out. I mean, they use terms like, what gender were you assigned at birth? Well, nobody's ever had their gender assigned at birth. How you got to have brain surgery. What's the matter with people? This is nuts. I mean, you see, every time we use their terminology, we reinforce their nonsense. So I am out of the game of using transition, even detrans. There are no detransitioners. There's people, and if you look at my website, it says, time to get your life back. That's all you're doing. You're just getting your life back. Has nothing to do with detransition. Sorry to the detransitioners, but you know, you're not detransitioning. All you did was wake up and go, this is insane. Why am I doing this? And so, you know, Walker, you know, I went back and challenged Walker. I went back and challenged Dr. Biber, who did my surgery, and said, you know, you know, after studying psychology at UC Santa Cruz, because I was going to become a gender therapist, right? Because I thought this was cool. I started running into all the underlying comorbidities when I started studying this and going, wait a minute. You know, there's separation anxiety, there's PTSD, there's, you know, bipolar disorder. How about body dysmorphia? Nobody ever talks about it. A lot of these people have body dysmorphia. They have everything else. They have everything else. They don't have gender dysphoria. Sorry. I've talked to these people. I haven't found one person that had gender dysphoria. If you get down to the nitty gritty, I'm passionate about this. The only reason they diagnose people with gender dysphoria is because that's the only way, and you as doctors understand this, that they can give them hormones and surgery. That's it. It's not even, they admit that they, in 2013, introduced gender dysphoria into the DSM so that they could use dysphoria as a code for coding and getting paid. It has nothing to do with diagnosing people. This is the biggest lie. I mean, this is a fraud, actually, a medical fraud. They should all be locked up, thrown away. So yeah, we're doing such a disservice. And when they reach me, I sit down and go, okay, your gender therapist is a quack. You're not a transgender. You never transition. You don't have gender dysphoria. We're going to spend some time. We're going to figure out what the real problem is. And we do. We found out they were sexually abused. We found out, you know, they were living in foster care. We found out, you know, somebody abused, a neighbor abused. There's always something that happened that caused them, this is the critical thing, that caused them to not like who they are. But it's not specific to gender. They just didn't like being who they were. I've talked to people who, boys, you know, they cut their genitalia off like I did, and they'll say, well, I cut it off because I didn't want anybody to touch me there again. It's not that I wanted to be a woman. Girls, you know, take hormones so that they look drastically different, not because they want to be men, because they want to repel anybody from touching or sexually abusing them because they were sexually abused. There's always some, I'll say this 100 times. It's not about gender. If you focus on trying to fix gender, you're always going to lose in the ability to help them. You've got to find out what the real issue is.
So, Tim and I, having been in family practice world for 30 plus years, you know, we talked about this and said, when we went to med school, I mean, I don't even remember really touching on this issue. You know, in psychiatry, I think it was kind of one of those out there things. When we were practicing, I think I remember hearing about two individuals. They were actually men who transitioned to female. I was kind of aghast that this person came in for a pap smear. It was, I thought, a man. And
with a full beard.
Yeah. I was like, nice. What? And that was in the 90s. And so it wasn't until 07 that I actually had my first patient, my own patient, who started to, she identified as gay, but then she said that she was going to go up to Portland and then another bastion of this, the beginning of this stuff to transition. She started doing the binding her breasts and was going to do hormones. And I'm like, what? And I knew her history. She had been abused by her actual uncle, and there's trauma. And I'm thinking, what about all the addressing this? Okay. So that was up until 2007. And I knew of three people. Well, all of a sudden, rewind past 2010, 2012, and now it's ridiculous. It's like an epidemic. Like I've heard, you know, like on the show, they say that in some schools, I mean, there's what, 3 out of 30 kids that are heterosexual. The rest are bi, trans, throw whatever name at it.
Non-binary, which almost literally like makes my head explode.
You know, we start to, we see this continuously. Is it, how much of it is it a fad because the other kids are doing it and kids won't identify? They see it on social media because being a teenager sucks. We all know whether you're a female or a male, it's a hard time with your body changing. It's an ugly period. You're trying to fit in. There's that. There's all these traumas. There's the social media pressure. So now we have this epidemic of it. How, in your experience, how much do you think is, there's traumas for sure. And I think more than 50%, right? 3/4, there's underlying trauma. But how much do you think is more perpetuated by all the social media influence and kids wanting to fit in?
Yeah, well, there are two other components to that. When I speak, I always talk about four being autism, which is a whole different issue, but take autism out of the scale. What you have is social contagion. And when the book came out, Rapid Onset Gender Dysphoria, I wanted to explode. It's like, well, you had such an opportunity to put in here rapid onset social contagion. We could have got our head around this and actually presented what the real issue is. It's not, they're using the word gender dysphoria, and it's not gender dysphoria. This is a social contagion. There's been psychiatric doctors, one of them wrote it, Dr. Karate, I think, from Case Western, wrote a great article years ago about this being a social contagion. So you have the social contagion aspect, and absolutely, I've instructed parents, you know, look at your kid's search history on their computer, grab their computer every day and look at their search history and see what they're looking at. They're being indoctrinated by stuff online, you know, TikTok, all this garbage. I mean, it's pornography, a lot of it. And I even had one father who, you know, contacted me. I said, well, look at the kid's search history. So I'm sure there's nothing there. And he got on it and found out that there was a guy, a homosexual guy that was actually, you know, guiding this kid into this whole stuff. And he was like appalled. He couldn't believe it. And we need as parents to be monitoring what our kids see. And I always tell parents, don't let your kid have a computer in their bedroom. Keep it out in the living room. Everybody needs to see what's on that screen, and have them put away their phones in a basket when they walk in the house. You don't get to walk around the house fiddling with that thing all day long. So, you know, that the internet is really a powerful force. It's a wonderful force in many ways. And then it's total garbage in the way that it harms our children. So you've got three things. You've got trauma. You've got the social contagion, which is huge. When you see 4 or 5 girls each in groups going into Planned Parenthood to get hormones. I mean, come on. You don't have to be a doctor to figure that one out. And so the internet then is the enemy that's in your house that you're not controlling. You've unlocked the door to allow someone to come in and abuse your child through your computer. And, you shouldn't do it. And I tell parents, take your kids out of public schools, because that's another garbage place. Schools are just trash. And so, you know, they're there. The public schools are there for the Biden administration to shove all their stuff down everybody's throat. Sorry, the guy is, you know, he put that wacko guy, you know, in HHS who runs around saying he's a woman. My God, he's the ugliest looking thing I've ever seen. I'm sorry, but sometimes you just have to cut through it. I mean,
call a spade a spade.
the individual is probably autogynephilia, is probably the same with Jenner. I think, you know, we had Leah Thomas admitted to being autogynephilia. Well, how come we can't say, this is not transgenderism. This is autogynephilia. They have a sexual fetish disorder. Why not call it what it is? I'll tell you the truth. 90% of the people that I've talked to over the last nearly 14 years, over 90% of them are heterosexual men, married, with children, with autogynephilia.
Right.
And can you define for our listeners what autogynephilia means.
Yeah, because we talked to Peter McCullough about this, and he was talking about how when Obamacare came in right before they passed it, they threw in this little caveat where you could have gender surgery. And all of a sudden, there was this rush of these, you know, fetishist men getting yeah. breast implants. They never wanted to get, you know, bottom surgery. They just were essentially drag queens that were getting free breast augmentation surgeries.
Absolutely.
And it was just like, I'm like, you're kidding me. So to listen exactly what you're saying, there's kind of three things. There's social contagion, there's trauma, and then there's essentially people that have sexual fetishes, you know?
Yeah. I think, you know, and I've had other small groups of people where one guy said, you know, I grew up in a family. I was one guy in a group of eight kids, Hispanic family. They didn't even know I was there until I started identifying as transgender. I just wanted them to know I was there. Wow. I did it to get attention. And so I think there's the attention part too. And there's many people who feel left out. And I was speaking in California over a year ago. And after I was done speaking, a coach came up to me and said, I have students come up to me. This is powerful. I have students come up to me and say, Coach, I'm afraid to not identify as a transgender because I'll get bullied.
What?
They're saying you almost must identify as a transgender or they will bully you into it. So, you know, this is what I mean. This whole thing is just, you know, the school system allows all this stuff. They allow it to go on. And I've had this, I had this with a 10-year-old girl that I worked with where they started transitioning her after she moved. This was in Kentucky and I'm still working with her. She's 13 years old now, but, they transitioned her without the parents knowing, a 10-year-old kid who was caught with a 14-year-old boy trying to tell her she was lesbian, she needed to be a boy, and, you know, and the kid's depressed. And so the teacher looked at her and said, you're depressed. And yeah, I'm depressed. They're writing bad things about me on social media. And the school, without the parents' knowledge, put the kids in a psychiatric hold in a hospital and wouldn't let the parents see the kid for a week. That's when she contacted me. And so I said, just take the kid out of there. No, you know, go steal it. Get the kid out, bring him home. We'll fix it. So that's what we had to do. And the kid's fine. Actually, now the child is excelling. Brilliant kid. Is going to actually start writing. It's a great writer, plays two instruments, long hair, gorgeous girl. The school was about to destroy this kid. And the mom writes me about every 90 days. Well, I can't thank you enough. You saved our entire family. You know, it's like the schools, that's what gets me so cranked up. We don't have enough people speaking out about the horrors. We need somebody in the White House to just change this whole public school system and shut it down. This stuff should not be in public schools ever. None of the books.
Totally agree. I mean, I would say there's a fourth component, which is the people that are supposed to be there to help
Satan,
help kids, the psychologists, you're right, the school pushing it, and then the medical, the physicians, the medical community at large who pushes this stuff, who buys into it, and it pisses me off because I'm like, what part of like medical science in the name of common sense, you're not, you know, you're assigned a gender now. And we have colleagues buying this, pediatricians going along with it. I'm like, where are all the medical professionals that, you know, don't remember their anatomy, physiology, and like basic that aren't standing up for this? And so that to me is, you know, frightening. You go to a psychologist to get your child help because, you know, they're depressed or they're questioning these things, or I don't feel right in this body. And the first thing that happens is, you're right, they don't want to explore like, well, what happened? Why do you feel this way? What are your fears? It's just like, they want to affirm right away. Straight to hormones, straight to surgery. This is criminal.
What 13-year-old feels right in their body?
None.
Like, nobody. None. Zero. Right?
Right.
Like, you know,
my point.
Like it's so completely ridiculous. And the problem is we as physicians have been so co-opted by the medical pharma, you know, industrial complex that we medicalize everything. And this is what drives me crazy. You were traumatized. You were deeply traumatized. Yeah. And we medicalized your trauma. We ignored it. This is like if somebody gets run over by a bus and you take them to the local ER and the ER goes, oh, you're in pain and because your bones are broken, and gives you ibuprofen and a pat on the rear and tells you to have a nice day and doesn't set your bones and do the surgery to repair you. It's completely, it's fraudulent and it's evil.
It is. And I wrote a book about this, and it goes back to the early 1900s, Dr. Cotton. Here's the other side of that coin. That's why I wrote it, because I actually thought the book was kind of humorous. And it's been published in a few other countries. But Paper Genders talks about Dr. Cotton, who, as a surgeon, thought he was going to be able to cure everybody's psychological ills by cutting people open and taking their spleen out and taking this out and cutting their genitals off and doing this. And then after about 12 years of doing this, the New York Times says, this doctor's brilliant. He's doing great work. And, you know, he's got a huge success rate. And I started looking at the studies and going back in and digging in. And he had 40% of his patients died. And he said, well, that's good. He said, that just shows that it was working.
Wow.
No, but that, and exactly. It's lobotomies all over again.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right? I mean, the guy that came up with lobotomies won a Nobel Prize for that. And again, it's medicalizing stuff that shouldn't be medicalized. It's like we're more than the sum of our parts. We really are. We really have a soul. We really have a spirit. We really have a mind. Nobody even knows where consciousness exists. We just know that it exists because we're all conscious. Yet somehow, you know, you're sad. Oh, no, you're not sad. You have a brain imbalance. No, you're sad because your wife left you.
Yeah.
Deal with your crappy relationships. Don't take pills for that. And we're all equally passionate about it because it's so obviously insane.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I had a mother call me. I don't know why my kid, is going through this. He says he's transgender. I just, you know, two or three quick emails. Tell me about his early childhood. This, it wasn't remarkable. He did have cancer. They had to cut his leg off, but otherwise he was fine. Our parents don't even understand what trauma is. That's one of the big problems is you can't, they think that any kids are resilient. I hear that all. No, they're not. They're fragile. And their brains aren't even developed until they're 25 or 30 years old. And we're doing all this stuff to them. And I'm getting them at, you know, 19 years old after they've gone through the surgery at 18. And saying, I feel like a Frankenstein monster. Can you put me back together again? You know, it's a Humpty Dumpty story. And so, these guys should be put in jail. It should be crimes against humanity. I call it institutionalized child abuse to give kids hormones and surgery. And people are making lots of money off of it. I've been helping people as a charity for 14 years. I've never charged anybody to do a video
yet.
and to help them. I mean, it's like it just taps into the most egregious thing where people are preying on people who've been harmed, people who are vulnerable. And so what we do is we devalue them, we dehumanize them and destroy them because they're struggling. I mean, those are the three things that happen when we call them transgender. We begin to devalue them as a man that God created or a woman that God created. We dehumanize them by filling them up with things that don't belong in their body. And then we destroy them by making it impossible for them to be a father and produce sperm or a mother to be able to have a child. So this is kind of abortion 2.0. We've got kids now that will not be able to have father children. That's what they talk to me about when they're in their 20s. Well, I never thought about the fact that I wouldn't be a father. I have no way to do that now. And so it's Marxism. I was in a documentary film called The Wolf in Sheep's Clothing, The Gender Agenda. And it's fantastic. I'm the only one in it. And it goes through and talks about how this is Marxism has been working toward this end to destroy man and woman. Destroy man and woman. You destroy the cornerstone of the church. You destroy the foundation of the family. You destroy everything to do with our society. Our society is built on one man, one woman, kids, family, church, God. That's all real. And so, the answers to everything that we know are in Genesis. The answers in Genesis. Read Genesis. Sperm, egg, happens 9 months before you're ever coming out. You're not assigned it. It happened 9 months before you ever popped out. Sorry, game over. You can't change all that stuff. All you can do is cosmetically destroy somebody's life, which, hey, I'm one of the people. Thankfully, the Lord has allowed me to save, I don't even know how many, but I stopped counting. And we get them sometimes before they ever get to the clinic. When they call me before the clinic, I tell them what they're in for. And some of them don't go. And then I had one recently where they went to the clinic and they said, geez, I couldn't believe you're spot on. They didn't care about my history. They didn't care about anything. They just said, here's a letter. Go get your hormones and they'll give you a letter for surgery. It's sort of like a mimeograph machine, you know, the little thing. You just print them out, let them go. And there's no doctors in there. There's no therapy. Everybody goes, oh, they get lots of therapy. They don't get any therapy. And in fact, they don't want anybody to have therapy. That's why, you know, they put up all these legal roadblocks against preventing people from going in and having being evaluated. And so, you know, I don't know. It takes a whole nation to get behind this. And I think doctors need to do walkouts in these clinics. And we're seeing whistleblowers, more and more of them. I think one from the state of Washington just came out. There was one from Missouri. They're starting to see the after effects and people are beginning to get it. But there are no transgenders. Nobody transitions. Not about gender dysphoria. Let's cut to what happened that caused these people to not like who they are. When they write me, I always write them back and say, so why do you want to erase who you are and try to become somebody you can't become? Answer me that question. It's just simple.
Something coming faster than any of us can imagine and will change our lives in the most dramatic ways is AI.
And while AI used to sound freaky to me and just something that was going to take over my world, it really would have revolutionized my practice had I stuck around. Many of you know, I got so burnt out from charting. It was the big reason I left medicine because I was frustrated with the EMRs, the clunkiness, and the amount of time it took to learn them. Not only that, but not being able to sit and connect with a patient and look them in the eye, like one-on-one while you're actually interacting with them, the whole reason we went into medicine, not to do paperwork.
Yeah, so that's why May and I have started working with Lindy.ai, which is fascinating. They help you produce the most efficient notes, fully customizable, which is different than some other AI products, so you can do what you do best, which is see patients and let the artificial intelligence scribe do the dirty work for you.
Yeah, not only do you get the perfect patient notes the way you want, written in any format, for whatever specialty you're in, and maybe you're in ophthalmology or vet medicine, it will also create the note, scribe and send the patient follow-up instructions, referral letters, consultation notes. It's amazing. Lindy is offering our listeners a 7-day trial to experience the difference of their AI medical scribe. Go sign up at lindy.ai/BS free to get started. That is Lindy, lindy.ai/BS free.
I know I've had this as much as we get angry and, you know, charged up about this. I mean, I had this conversation with one of my best friends who's a pastor. And I said, you know, anyone who hates their body so much that they want to cut their genitals off deserves nothing but our compassion. But the people pushing this agenda deserve nothing but justice.
Yeah.
You know, that's great. I love that. Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, the churches are kind of afraid to tackle this. Huh?
You know.
They'll have me come to church, but they don't necessarily get, I've been doing Sunday services a little bit, but most of the time they want me there on a Wednesday night to close group and they don't want anybody to know, right? It's like, oh boy, we're going to talk about this. But, you know, the churches sadly aren't preaching God's design of man and woman. That's what, when they asked me, I said, okay, we'll do this, but well, you got to preach on Sunday and preach about God's design of man and woman. It's not complicated.
Right. So I would love for you to share, you know, a condensed version with our audience, like what it was like. And I think this is powerful because people like Chloe Cole, who are really notable and coming out, and other people that are stopping taking the hormones and speaking out about what happened to their physical body when they underwent, you know, the surgeries and the lifelong effects, not just the fact that you can't have children, but some of these nerve damage and chronic sores and what the hormones do. Can you share with our audience what that was like and how you felt when you started taking hormones, and then what physical process did you go through when you started this journey changing from who you were?
Yeah, 40 years ago. And so, you know, I guess the best way that I can, you know, kind of put it is it's like being a drunk. You know, you're going in, taking the drink, and you think you're doing well and all that. And then, you know, in my case, 8 years later, you woke up with a hangover. But, if we understand trauma, we understand you're always trying to get out of the pain. So you're looking for, you know, I used cocaine, I used alcohol, I was a drunk. I made a lot of money. My wife divorced me, as right she should have. You know, when people go to a gender clinic, this is really the key, and they talk about what happened to them, or if they had, their family had a wicked divorce or something like that, you need to understand there are not candidates for hormones and surgery. Chloe Cole falls into that category. I want to see Chloe Cole and they're talking about the parents who allowed this to happen. This is not, in my view, it's not about Chloe Cole. It's about what parent who, by the way, their parents went to one therapist who said, don't do it. And they kept shopping around until they found one that said yes. So I want to interview the parents and say, why in the world would you do this? You know, what went through your mind? And so, Chloe has, gotten a lot of media, but there's a huge missing piece that is important for us to hear. And that's parents speaking about this issue and how they got caught up in it. I think that's a bigger issue than Chloe's issue, frankly, because the parents have to sign off on this in many states, not every state. But in many states, they have to sign off on it. So I want to know what their underlying comorbid disorders are, right?
Right. It's sad because you hear from, you know, the interaction and from my experience and, of course, what we see is, I would say that sometimes the parents, I feel like they're victims because they just want to help their kid. Their kid's hurting. They turn to these experts and they think, I guess this is what's supposed to help them. You know, they always push the whole, would you rather, I hate this, but would you rather have a living sort of son instead of daughter, instead of a dead daughter, because they're not happy. And they use, they threaten that, which we know is not true, that but suicide, but there's that. In. Then there's the other side where some of the, I'm like, what? It's hard enough when I'm a woman, I'm in menopause and I'm taking hormones and I can't get them to freaking balance right for me.
Yeah.
I can giving cross-sex hormones or puberty blockers to a kid, that's a whole other level of insanity. Why would you do that as a parent? So go ahead.
The thing about the parents, you know, I'm not cutting them any slack because my website's been out there for 14 years. All they had to do is, oh, I wonder if anybody regrets this. Tap in sex change regret. My website comes up. It's had millions of views. All they have to do is, like you do with anything when you're putting your child into something, is this going to be okay for them? This is just common sense stuff. This isn't magic. And I've had the opportunity to speak to parents again, and I tell them, yeah, they always tell you that they're going to commit suicide. And of course, a few times I've said, you know, if your kid said they're going to commit suicide, then you should put them in psychiatric care immediately because there's something really wrong. And don't by any means give them hormones or surgery, because somebody thinking about suicide should not be undergoing such procedure, right? Another common sense. So I think, you know, I've worked really hard. I wrote my first book in 2006. I published my first article in January of 2015 about don't give hormones to kids. I published another one shortly thereafter and been publishing them ever since. I don't know how many I've got out there. And the only place that I ever got much traction was in Russia. And they actually had a team come and film me for a documentary. 200 million people saw it in Russia because Putin's against it. And so Putin's a bad guy, but when it comes to this issue, he's got it right. And, you know, he won't allow people to do this nonsense. And so, I don't know why, Soros and money and all that other stuff. Money's a big, huge factor here. So,
but you're right. You know, we think of other things, and you're talking with people back in, you know, when I was young, our day, it was anorexia and eating disorders was the thing for sort of body self-harm. And I was anorexic and bulimic. And I say this out, you know, publicly, like if someone's to affirm my condition by saying, oh yeah, you're right. You are fat. Even when I was underweight, and sure, we'll give you a gastric bypass. Here's some diet pills and to enable that. That would have been criminal behavior. And we can see that still, but somehow when it comes to, you're right, parents, medical community, giving hormones to kids, and parents go, well, I guess they really, you know, if my child who's 8 thinks she's really like a boy or a mermaid or a pirate, then we can go ahead and cut body parts off or what, cut a leg off because you're a pirate. I mean, it makes no sense. And why aren't parents, I don't know, waking up?
Well, hopefully, you know, someday by doing what you're doing, what I'm doing, what everybody's doing, speaking up about the insanity of it.
How much would you say, and I think I know your answer is, I won't say, it's, I think, all a responsibility of the parents to raise their children, but how much of this is a form of child abuse to your own child when you're enabling this kind of nonsense?
I've said it. It is. Mm-hmm. I call it emotional and psychological, that sometimes becomes sexual child abuse. But it's at least emotional and psychological child abuse to tell your kid that you can change genders, which is BS.
Right.
They can't do it. Nobody in world history has ever changed anyone's gender. Nobody has ever changed their gender. Sorry, folks. Doesn't happen. That's the BS part. And
right.
So you've changed your persona. That's absolutely factually correct. That's your persona is fluid. And so I like the non-binary thing because I have people come out, I'm non-binary. I said, well, just by saying that you're non-binary, you're binary.
I love it. That's brilliant.
Totally, it's absolutely brilliant. True. So I want to get, what was your tipping point after the 8 years, living as a woman?
Yeah.
What was there like a day? Was it like a religious conversion? Was it you got really drunk, woke up with a hangover and said, everything in my life has to change? What was it?
I got sober. That's what part of it was. I stopped. I got 37 years without a drink, which was the best thing that happened. And so I was working for a carpet company down in Santa Cruz. And I was driving one day I had just sold the convention center their carpet. I mean, I was doing a great job. I was successful at it. And I remember driving down the road and said, my identity is a transgender. Who in the world wants to live the rest of their life with an identity of transgender? And I said, it's fake. I know it's fake. And so that was kind of the wake up call and said, well, I'm asking myself, what identity do you want to have? Well, I want to have my identity in Jesus Christ. And so that was where I started. And I continued my sobriety. I've got 37, 38 years coming up. When I finally got down and on my knees and confessed I was wrong, that people don't change genders, it actually started when I challenged my surgeon and Dr. Walker to write a document to Superior Court of California, San Mateo, stating what hormones and surgery do to people. And because I was trying to restore my birth record from Laura Jensen female back to Walt Heyer male. And so I needed some documentation. And I had challenged both of them on their authenticity about being able to do what they're doing. And I said, you know, if you guys are legit, write an affidavit to the court. They did. And they said, hormones and surgery don't change anybody's gender.
Wow. Yeah, so to kind of shift gears just a little bit, I see the legal system and some very courageous lawyers as being part of the way out of this, because, you know, like Joe Rogan said on his Aaron Rodgers interview, which was last week, there's going to be a lot of lawsuits about this because there's going to be a tremendous amount of regret. And then the lawsuits are going to be flying. Yeah. And I don't disagree with criminal prosecution either, by the way, but I think that one's a reach. Have you worked with anybody in the legal world, you know, as an expert witness or, you know, yes, any of these kind of things? Because I think this is huge.
I've been working with ADF for 8 years. I speak at, I was just in Costa Rica speaking to lawyers, ADF lawyers. I've been speaking to ADF lawyers at their events for 7 years this year. So I work directly with a lawyer there. I have a lawsuit with Kaiser Permanente of California with a young man that they diagnosed at the age of 13 with schizophrenia, bipolar 1 disorder, and PTSD because he was sexually abused as a kid. They also diagnosed him with gender dysphoria, which is like, you got to be a drunk to do that. And so at 13, he was under their care that entire time, until he was 24 years old. They resurfaced the idea that he had gender dysphoria, cut his genitals off in March of 2021. He contacted me in August of 2021. He said, I don't know why they did this surgery to me. I didn't want it. We have I got all the documents. And through ADF, we've got an attorney from San Diego that's filed a lawsuit, which is in action right now. In fact, there's 4 or 5 cases against Kaiser Permanente right now. Chloe Cole's one of them. And so, Richard is another one. He's a young African American man, delightful, but, he was badly damaged. Schizophrenia, bipolar 1 disorder, and PTSD, and you're gonna add to this equation and say, well, you got gender dysphoria. That can't be. It's nonsense.
Wow.
So just for our clarity for our listeners, ADF is the Alliance Defending Freedom.
Yeah.
An amazing organization that should be supported by all listeners. Absolutely. They do pro bono work in the religious freedom primarily, but they're getting into a lot of these cases. They've argued, I don't know how many cases before the Supreme Court, and they have some real, true, honest to God, warrior patriots that work for them.
Absolutely. And I've worked with many of them, and I've testified on the steps of the Superior Court. I've written briefs for many cases around the country. When I testified on the steps of the Supreme Court, though, I had a guy in a suit that had a gun with him because the protesters were so vigorous. And they said that they had those microphones shouting back so they couldn't hear me. And everybody said, well, your voice was so loud, you actually blew the guy with the thing out.
I love it.
I've been working with them. It's delightful. And we've actually pulled together 4 ADF roundtables, bringing in people who've struggled with this and had regret from people that I've worked with. And we sat around the roundtable discussing how to best approach this. And thankfully, there's a lot of people in this big arena now. You know, there's lawyers in Texas who are specialized in helping people who've been harmed by it. There's just so many different groups that have popped up that when I came on the scene, in 2015, there were none, You know, I was doing 45 interviews like this in a week because there was nobody to talk to. And so now, you know, I'm a shriveled up old man going, you know. So I had one guy write me and says, I am sick and tired of you, old man. You know, you needed this and that. The guys, when I used a lot of vulgar language, which was very colorful. And I just wrote him back and said, well, be patient. I'm in my 80s. It won't be long, baby. I'll be gone.
Oh, my goodness.
No, when I want to be you when I grow up. I want to have your courage in the
I love
in
it.
30 years. You know, it really is inspiring.
I want to know. So I heard from another therapist that's speaking up a story of a family, because I'm going to ask, what do you suggest for families that really want to escape? And if their child is struggling, what to do? Because I heard a story about there was a family in Washington. I think the child was in junior high and starting to think about, you know, gender identity and trans, and the school was, you know, condoning it, going along with it. And the family literally had to take her, you know, one weekend, pull her out of school and literally fled the country, went back to, I think it was India, because they were afraid that social services were going to take their child away. You hear these stories. I mean, short of anyone literally leaving the country and hiding, because we know that kids get taken away, parents are not supported in these things. What advice do you have for parents in seeking out a supportive therapist, psychiatrist, psychologist group when your child is going through this and you're afraid that the school system, the psychologist, social services is going to get involved and be against you?
Well, you know, that's the beauty of having the foundation of the church. You know, if you're a believer, you've got people around you. Churches generally have somebody who's a psychiatrist or a psychologist or somebody that they can make contact with that they can trust. You know, I was just writing a piece about, because I'm writing two books right now. And in one of the books, I talk about it, the importance of parents interviewing therapists. And how to interview them. I mean, it takes up a whole chapter in how to navigate this and determine who are you going to turn your child over to. As a parent, you need to protect them. And you know, I spoke in Hong Kong, and I was with a psychiatrist and with a psychologist, three of us there speaking at Hong Kong University. And I learned from them that they do not allow a child to be counseled by himself. It's the family. Their whole system is everybody's in the pool because it's a pool issue. And I thought, man, you know, here we divide and conquer, right? And right. They try to pull a kid out. But I thought this is, to me, should be the way we do it here. That, and it's very effective because nobody can, you know, the kid can't diss on the parents and, you know, they're going to get called on all the stuff that's a lie. And so they're much more effective there. When they have that type of environment, they bring everybody in, all the kids, mom, dad, everybody that's in that environment, that household environment. If grandpa's in there, they're in there too. So everybody's got to be in that environment. And that if you find out, like, is there somebody there that's a drug addict, alcoholic, struggling with other issues? And sometimes somebody can have cancer. They can be dying in the household. These are critical things that you need to address for a child who's suffering. These are adverse childhood experiences that cause trauma. And so you can work through these things. So I think parents need to be experts at interviewing therapists. And they can write a note to sexchangeregret.com. I'm right now shifting this over to where I'm training a bunch of new people. We're going to bring Sex Change Regret to 500 churches this year. And we're expanding it out. I'm working with Lucas Miles, who wrote the book Woke Jesus. I've partnered with him, and we're starting now what's called the Higher Institute. And the Higher Institute will have training, and will have Sex Change Regret under its umbrella. And we want all churches to have the opportunity, if they wish, to be able to train people within their church to be able to help parents who are struggling, teach them how to find therapists, have therapists available. This is something that's unfolding. It'll probably take, you know, I just signed the contract about 2 weeks ago. So we're just launching it. So by the end of the year, it should be, you know, pretty much up and running. It's part of, I don't know if you've heard it before, but it's called the Pastors Project, where all these pastors sign up to not be woke. And so some people don't like that word, but too bad. So we have to have some. Parents just need to not believe that their kid can change genders. Number one, they gotta know that this is all false nonsense.
It's a symptom of something else bigger, some trauma and struggle that they're going
That's
through.
That's exactly yes. right. That word symptom, and I've written that when you hear gender dysphoria, realize that's a symptom of some deeper comorbid disorder that's causing their distress. Get in and find out what that comorbid disorder is, resolve that issue, and they don't have the issues anymore.
You know, it just struck me with what you're doing and reaching out to churches is we need a movement of almost like crisis pregnancy centers. We have crisis pregnancy centers. I'm actually the medical director of one in Oregon. Yeah. And so it's a counterbalance to things like Planned Parenthood. So we need that exact same thing in the therapist and spiritual world as a counterbalance to Planned Parenthood and to these gender affirming care. So your kid is confused. Oh, here's a place that you can go where they can get different information and you know, family counseling, which again, we were trained by a classic analyst in Canada, and he would never counsel a kid by himself. It was always family therapy. He said, it's a family problem. It's not a child problem.
Right. Exactly right. And I hope I'll probably be gone by the time it happens. But I think what we're starting now could become that place where there is clinics in each. We're trying to get churches to start these clinics, even if I always encourage them, find a therapist within your church. And if he has a center, a building, a place, then you can start using that like they do Planned Parenthood centers to help people. And because it's, you don't want to bring all that into the church if you can find a vehicle to do it. I know Saddleback Church in California they've got like, I don't know how many, 30 or 40 therapists down there that help people. And it's in a separate thing, which is really the model for churches to be able to offload that so that it isn't on church property and put it off somewhere. And that's kind of the next phase. We got to get this phase going first.
Yeah, gender crisis clinics. I mean, that's really what this is coming down to. It sounds completely crazy, but it's what we need.
Adverse childhood crisis center.
There you go. I like that. Like I say, it's just a symptom of a bigger
problem. The word gender. It's like, you know, that's the boogeyman that they put in there that's false. That's where Satan is. Satan's in the gender issue. There isn't gender issues. And that's why as long as we keep looking at this as a gender issue, we're going to continue to fail.
Right.
We have to look at this as what it really is. It's some other adverse childhood experience, or it's an addiction to the computer, being indoctrinated, social contagion, or autism, which is unfortunately one of the things.
I mean, it's like all the other things, whether it's an eating disorder, an undereating and overeating, mutilating your body by cutting. We don't endorse that. It's a symptom of the underlying problem.
It's a symptom of everything we do in medicine.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that you have a terrible diet and you don't exercise. It's that you just have a high A1C and you need to take Jardiance, and we have morbidly obese people dancing around advertising drugs for multi-billion dollar a year multinational corporations. It's completely, completely insane.
Yeah.
Like, look at the root cause.
Well, and we're insane for buying into it. That's why I'm closing the door on using the terminology. Can't get it out of me. I'll fight it tooth and nail. This isn't about gender. It's not about transgenderism, transitioning, or anything else. Come on, guys. Buy my books if you want to support me, which I really need. Buy my book. Buy lots of them. Use them for door stops. I don't care what you use them to start a fire in your furnace. I don't care. Backyard barbecue, they're good for that too. So
use them to whack some common sense into people's heads. That's what I'm going to do. So tell everybody, where do they get your books? Can they get them on Amazon, your website? What do you suggest? Yeah,
worldhire.com, sexchangeregret.com, Amazon. Just buy lots of them when you buy them.
Well, we are happy to support that. We will link those in our newsletter on our show as well, because we feature Book of the Week all the time in our newsletter, and we will feature all yours till the end of Kingdom Come, because this is a cause I could totally get behind forever. And I know that we could probably just go on all day and get so much more information from you to share with our listeners, but we'll respect your time and say thanks for... What's that?
I said I'm an old man and I need my nap. So it's
there
time.
You go.
That's right.
Walt, thanks for taking time to be on our show, because I know you're so, highly sought after, and we can't thank you enough for you just gracing your presence like here. And I hope that people do reach out to all the resources you have. So thanks again for being here. And we are so blessed that you are where you're at today and the work that you're doing.
You blessed me. Thank you. God bless.
Thank you for tuning into today's episode brought to you by Resolve. Your career as a physician deserves the best support. Visit resolve.com today to discover how they can empower you. Resolve, your trusted partner for physician contract review, negotiations, and salary data.
It's no secret that medicine is a bit uptight. That's why Tim and I created BS Free MD. To mix things up a little and have fun in the process. Besides, we are having these exact same discussions all the time, so we thought we might as well invite everyone to the party. If you really like us, you can get plenty more and maybe see one of Tim's cool tattoos on our Instagram or Facebook pages at BS4MD. See you next time.
While we try to keep BS3MD as raw and real as possible, we can't be held responsible for any medical decisions or discussions had as a result of what you've heard on the show. We know, bummer. But the truth is, we really do care about your questions. So feel free to reach out to us by email at doc@bs3md.com.